say hello to a new friend on an old road. Take a two-lane trip of memories into mysteries unknown. Come along for the ride. Jim Hinckley's America. Jim Hinckley's America.
Good morning, my friends. It's another wonderful day here in Jim Hinckley's America. In Kingman, Arizona, it's 50 degrees, tad bit windy, supposed to be sunshine today. Personally, I don't know how much this person can take, sunshine and warm weather day after day. It's like a curse. On a serious note, we definitely need some rain today. Talking about road trips today with Denny Gibson, a friend and us, an associate I've known for a few years. So it's fitting we have a little music from the road crew to talk about road trips. Hey, Mr. Denny Gibson, how are you this morning?
Doing great, Jim. I hope I'm coming through.
Yeah, we got you here.
Super.
You know, this technology stuff just fascinates the daylights out of me. How it can work. You know your book, Tracing a T to Tampa. The thing with a Model T Ford is it worked or it didn't work, but you knew why, and it gave you some warning. This technology stuff, it works now. 5 minutes from now, it doesn't for no apparent reason.
Right. On T's, you could actually see the parts. And when they broke, they usually could see that too.
There's two things I find about modern technology. I wouldn't want to, first of all, go back to writing on a typewriter, writing books and things. But technology, I find two advantages. I try to find a silver lining in everything. Number one, trying to do things like this podcast, I never have to look for an excuse to drink. Correct. And number two, it gives me added incentive to think of becoming an Amish farmer as a career move.
Hey,
you know, I always enjoy your books, but this one, it was great, first of all, to see you at the Miles of Possibilities Conference.
Conversations there, Jim. Enjoyed that.
Yeah, I always enjoy that event, and it's always good to visit. There's never enough time for a one-on-one visit. That's the problem.
Oh, yeah.
I got to tell you, though, of all the books you've done, this one really struck a chord, Tracing a T to Tampa. How exciting, how fascinating to try to follow along in your great-grandparents' footsteps. And I was really surprised that you found so many locations in spite of their vague descriptions. How many of those places still exist?
Surprisingly, I don't know. I was going to say surprisingly, quite a few. Of course, there wasn't that many. There's a lot more that are gone. I was surprised at that. Found some that she specifically identified. You know, for example, you probably read a thing about the sugar mill. That one really kind of excited me, a couple hundred years old. And a few other places, some bridges and things. But, of course, most of the businesses are gone.
Oh, the sugar mill. That was another episode. The language. I was really glad that you included the letters verbatim. And a lot of people would shy away from using some of the language that our ancestors used. And I'm glad you didn't.
I was certainly inclined to shy away from some of that, but it was used in the day. No question there. So keep it precise. And as you probably guessed, that book is different for a couple reasons. It's more personal because it's family, and I did it kind of for the family. You know, a lot of people are still around that knew that couple, my great grandparents, and so part of the goal was to get that stuff saved where it was distributable and get it out to family members. So that put an extra kind of twist on it too.
You mentioned that you have the intricacies of a Model T. You haven't quite mastered that yet.
Well, the transmission.
Yeah,
I actually after writing about teas a little bit, I thought, you know, I really ought to try this. So I did go up in Pennsylvania last year and drove a few. They run a little class up there at one of the new museums. And I've got figured out. But the way that transmission works, I've looked at diagrams. I've spun my fingers in the air and twisted my fist around. It just doesn't click with me.
No, you know, they were amazing automobiles as far as simplicity. Mm. I don't think you could make a car any more simplistic than a Model T Ford. Once you figure out the unique nature of trying to operate the transmission and the throttle on the steering column, once you have that figured out, they're just ridiculously simple automobiles.
Oh, they are. Yeah. I was talking about the throttle. I was surprised when I drove them. I had always assumed it was kind of like a lawn tractor and you set the throttle and just, you know, went around and didn't touch it. But it's actually just about as active as, you know, our foot pedals today.
Yeah. 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 It's kind of a challenge, but it's entertaining. When my wife and I were courting 40 plus years ago, I had a 26 Ford touring car we used for double dating. I kept in Kingman. And your stories here reminded me so much of that. This particular tea had been sitting behind a dairy farm since the 50s. And there was no top and no upholstery. It was just literally springs. But I kept a roll of foam and indoor-outdoor carpet I could put on the seats before I'd go pick up my date.
Such a romantic.
Yeah, this book, and it's interesting too that you chose to take your trip during the era of the apocalypse to do this.
Well, that wasn't a choice, a free choice.
No.
That was the anniversary. You know, that was 100th anniversary.
But what I'm saying is, you didn't let the apocalypse slow you down too much.
No, but I was certainly prepared for it. That was the only trip of any length that year. And I said, well, I'm definitely going to start on that day, but I was prepared to postpone the rest of the trip if I really ran into trouble. Or at that time, the possibility of, you know, out-of-state travel being shut down existed. So that was in the back of my mind, but turned out that didn't happen. And as I've said, recently, all the motels were empty and half of the restaurants were closed, but you could get through.
Perseverance. That is key to any road trip. And you've had a few. Another one, some of the letters I found really fascinating, like driving an open Model T touring car. And Frank is so cold, he had to stop and warm. It was 18 degrees above this morning. I consider myself kind of a little bit more rugged than the average modern traveler. And I get a little fussy if there's not enough hot water to shave and take a shower. Right. But what these people took as normal at that time is kind of interesting.
Yeah, you probably noticed later on where they, I guess, when they were coming home, they would drain the radiators at night when they were camping, because of course they had no antifreeze. And then they would sometimes have to tow the cars, tow each other to get started in the morning. It's a different time.
I had the privilege a few years ago to assist the Historic Vehicle Association, and they recreated Edsel Ford's trip of 1915 mm-hmm. yep. to California along the National Old Trails Road. And they followed as much of the original road as they could. And I got to tell you, I'd have to do some serious drinking to take my Jeep the places they took that Model T in the desert. They gave me a copy of Edsel Ford's travel journal. And not only draining the radiators at night, but they would build a small fire under the car in the mornings to heat the oil. Who even thinks of building a fire under your car in the morning?
That sounds a little touchy, but
How many books have you written now, Denny?
Total of seven. They're all travelogues. And I sometimes get, beat up. But people, they are not guidebooks. And sometimes, despite me trying to be as upfront about that as I can, I sometimes get a little static. But that's what they are. They tell of my trip on these places. It doesn't try to plan out your trip for you. You know, it's just a story. I will mention, you had said something about this being my latest book. It's actually not. There's one since then.
Oh, okay.
With a goofy name called 20 and 21 and the YT2. Across the country twice, once on historic US 20, and then the other direction on the Yellowstone Trail. So that was in 21. Okay. And then I've stopped.
I'm getting behind here on my collection. Maggie May, she's from Michigan with the R.E. Olds Museum. And right. She mentions the Gilmore Museum in Michigan has Model T driving classes.
I know. I guess they have them back now. At that time, they were weren't having. That's the first place I looked at when I wanted to do that. And they were old, I guess, probably left over from the pandemic. So the place in Pennsylvania was the only one I could find. I also tried, there's a Model T museum closer to me in Richmond, Indiana.
Oh.
And I thought that one time they did driving things, but I called them and they said, guy I talked to said no, so I don't know whether that was miscommunication, they were on hold or what, but that wasn't happening either.
Two of the things that Model A's and Model T's, a couple of things that really amaze me about those cars even today is the owners. People will own these beautiful Packards and Hudsons that are road cars that you can get out on the highway. Even in a 1916 Hudson, you can get out and go. But people who have these cars, Hudsons, DeSotos, Chryslers, they won't drive them. They trailer them or they have to street rod them. But yet people with Model A's and Model T's think absolutely nothing about getting together with their friends on a whim and driving to Alaska.
Yep, absolutely. Yeah, I admire that.
Oh, I do too. I hope I don't offend anyone, but I got to share this. And I'll tell you why. There's one part of the book, one section in your great-grandparents' letters. You mentioned the cane mill. And it says, we've just returned from the cane mill. We took some pictures of the mill and also of the Coons. They were very nice people. They are Methodist. And I found that personal. Really personal. My Ma's family down on Sand Mountain, Alabama, that is exactly how my Aunt Violet talked. Word for word, yeah. She was the sweetest, kindest person you ever met, but she had no problem, even into the early 90s, using the N-word or coons or whatever the term may be. And she'd always pepper it with, but they were Methodist. They were nice. You know?
Yeah.
As if they had two strikes against them for being Methodist.
Well, on that language and so forth, that was, of course, the way they talked. As I say somewhere, I don't know in the book about, they weren't, Granny in particular, she writes that. And I'm sure she was prejudiced. She considered them, somewhere less than her, but she meant no harm to anybody. You know, it was kind of a strange situation, and trying to cleanse those letters would have been a tough thing. Not that they're, that those words appear everywhere, but they do appear, and they it just would have made it different.
You know? Well, I found it refreshing, and I'll tell you why, is because cleansing history is no good. When you do it this way, and it's accurate, it becomes a milestone on how far we've progressed as a people. Yep. and how far we've got to go. But unless you can't really judge these people, you have to put yourself you can't look at their world through our eyes today. You have to put yourself in their period. And that doesn't mean they were right or wrong. It just means that they had a different worldview. And you can't understand that if you sterilize it.
Yep, exactly, yeah.
You've had some other great adventures, like on the Lincoln Highway?
Yeah, I've done the done the Lincoln, I guess, end-to-end. In one shot, I've only done it end-to-end once, but I've done a lot of piecemeal and put it together. That's a great road, great adventure, of course. And mentioned, I don't want to put you in a bad light because of 66 thing. For me, 66 was kind of a gateway drug, I guess, and got me onto some other things. But I've done it end to end four times. I've not done any books on it because I just don't have anything new to say, I guess. But
did it. You don't put me in a bad light at all. I'm not myopic. And
I know, Jim.
And Route 66, I've heard that before. Route 66 is the gateway drug. It gets people into the frame of mind to be able to appreciate and enjoy a road trip. And going back to your books, no, they're not a travel guide, but they are road trip inspiration. And that right there is priceless to inspire people. Yeah. And you kind of, one of your Lincoln Highway trips, you did it in an older car, correct?
I did it, that one I did end-to-end was a 63 Valiant. It's the first time I've ever, and the only time I've ever done an older car. And I planned that ahead of time. It was going to be 100 years old. The road was going to be 100 years old. And I thought of doing it in a 100-year-old car, and I thought, I'm not good for that. And so I cut that in half and did it in a 50-year-old car. So it was a 63 car in 03, or in 13, rather. In getting that car ready, did some, put an electronic ignition in it. And meant I had to do some timing. I'm laying on the floor and I'm doing this by myself. And three or four times getting up off a concrete floor convinced me that I'm a little too old for this stuff. So the car was going after the trip. That's the only one I've done, and it's the only one I will do. But, yeah, it's not like, when you're in your teens and working on that old junker in the backyard, bouncing up and down is pretty easy. It's not so easy today.
You know, I can relate. In my head, I'm still 20, and I go out and spend a half a day working on this 51 Chevy truck, and I almost crawl in the house. And I can't stand up for 2 days and I walk like a question mark.
Yep.
even a car in the 60s and your Valiant, was that a slant six?
Oh, yeah. Slant six push button.
That old slant six was a very, very good motor.
Yep.
Very good. You know, gosh darn it. Even the cars in the 60s and 70s even. They seem so primitive to what we're doing today. And they do require a little bit more work.
Right. Oh, yeah. The work and the... I'll tell you the things I noticed in driving that car up on a long trip. Mostly was brakes. It's amazing what we get used to with, power-assisted disc on all wheels compared to those old drum brakes that were not only weaker but would heat up. I remember going through Pittsburgh, lots of up and downs on the old road, and those brakes were fading by the time we got to the end of the day.
At the risk of sounding like a name dropper, I had a visit with Jay Leno a while back, and we were talking about this on the old cars, that the new cars you steer and you ride in them, the old cars you drove and you prayed.
Yeah. Yep.
I've had this obsession for years, and I better do it soon, but I want to do 66 in a Model A Ford, but man, I better do that one quick.
Yeah, I would like to do that, I think, but my experience bouncing up on the floor, I don't know that I've got it in me to maintain a car like that for a trip.
Well, Denny, you know, we could make this a team effort. We'll get us a Model A and we'll terrorize the countryside and see how much apple pie we can eat.
Oh, I can do my share of the apple pie. I don't know.
I get to reading, and there again, we mentioned Edsel Ford, your great grandparents. Edsel Ford's travel journal from 1915. He mentions that they left Williams, Arizona. They were, of course, rich kids. And a couple of his buddies had a new Cadillac V8, and the others had a new Stutz. Ah. And his entry for July 16th, 1915, they left Williams, Arizona that morning and arrived at the Brunswick Hotel in Kingman at midnight. They considered it a good day's run, 156 miles, because they only had two flat tires and broke one spring on the Stutz.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure you knew this anyway, but as that goes, talking about the tires, I think one of the biggest improvements in cars is the tires.
Yes, yes.
You know, those guys, we said they had two in one day. Your grandparents had multiples every, you know, other page it seems there's a flat tire. And I don't know, and you too, I mean, you didn't have any flat tires when you drove from Arizona to Illinois last month.
No.
I didn't have any flat tires. I haven't had, you know, it just doesn't happen much anymore.
They don't even put spare tires in things anymore. When I was a kid growing up, and you probably did this too, we patched a lot of tubes along the highway.
Absolutely. Yep.
Yeah. Maggie has
tires too.
Maggie has a question. Why would we do a trip like that in the Model A versus a Model T?
Well, from my point of view, Model A is, one, a lot easier to drive, and it's a lot easier to keep up with the traffic in them.
Yeah. T. Lindsey Baker, Dr. Baker, that was the Miles of Possibility conference, he's had Model A Fords since he was in high school and still drives them. And when he did his Route 66 research trip for his book, he was driving a 29 Ford Woody.
I know that. That's I met him at that conference. I think you introduced me, in fact, at that conference.
Yeah.
That's pretty amazing, driving those A's. You had Tom Cotter on your show here a while back. I listened to that one.
Yes.
He did it. Did the Lincoln in a Model T, or most of the Lincoln.
Yes.
In a T, but that was not your run-of-the-mill Model T. That was pretty highly modified and able to at least get up in the 40s.
I met a group 2 years ago, two summers ago. They were from Galveston, Texas, and they started planning this trip relatively spur of the moment. 6 months, they had some. They belonged to a Model T club. Some of their friends owned Model Ts, and they decided to make the Grand Adventure. They set out from Galveston, Texas, in March. I met them here in Kingman. They drove over to Tucson, six people in Model T Fords. They drove to Tucson, up to Kingman, and then over to California, San Francisco through Death Valley. Mm. And up the coast, they took the ferry up to Alaska and drove back to Texas down the Alcan Highway. Oh, wow. The oldest was a 1916 Ford, and the newest was a 1925.
Oh, wow. That is pretty adventuresome. Yeah, that is. In fact, I've just picked or ordered Cotter's book on his grand adventure up through there.
Yes. That's something I've always wanted to do. Have you ever been up in that country?
I did. Yep. That was a lifelong. I think the Alcan was probably the first road when I was probably 10 years old. Somebody my dad worked with had been up there, and he had these home movies, 8mm silent movie kind of things. And they got a bunch of guys together, and we watched these movies. And I just thought that was the coolest thing I'd ever seen. Of course, it was a lot different then. So I had wanted to do the Alcan forever. And so I finally did that in 2016, I guess. A lot different than what those movies showed, but a great trip, absolutely.
Well, it's been on my list for a long time. My problem is the older I get, I've been a desert rat so long, it gets below 80, I look for my long underwear.
Yeah.
And the longer I'm out here, I'm starting to push that. Now it gets below 85. I start looking for my long underwear. So I might have some real issues going up there.
Yeah, well, there's only, I did it in July. Let's see, how did I do that? I forget. The beginning of, end of June, July, somewhere now. I was there the 4th of July anyway. There's only a couple months that it's pretty normal for me, temperatures, you know. Doesn't get up in the 80s and 90s you might be used to, but it's, there's no snow or very, you know, not much. Outside of that, I wouldn't want much to do with it.
Do you have any upcoming adventures planned or new book projects?
Well, anything? I don't know exactly. I mean, not completely planned, but the next one, I've been wanting to do National Old Trails Road end-to-end. I've done the National Road as far as Vandalia, you know, the original.
Yeah.
And I've done, probably been on all the National Old Trails bits and pieces, but never did it end-to-end. So that's been on my to-do list. And I actually sort of had that plan for this last year, and a lot of other things got in the way. But now I've got more incentive. You probably remember that Mike Ward used some of your Facebook space or something to in one of your conversations, he uploaded the Pike's Peak
version
book. Right. And I had never, I think I probably bid on a couple of those and they got away. So I've never seen the full path. And that's one that I've wanted to do forever. I've done bits and pieces. And it's going to make a perfect partner for the National Old Trails.
Yes.
One direction on one and one on the other. So I don't have that plotted out, but that's the next, I hope to get that in next year. I've got the National Old Trails kind of together plotted, but haven't even started on the Pike's Peak. But that'd make a real, I don't have a date or even, you wouldn't call it a plan, but it's in the back of my head.
You get out this way, I'll show you some sections of the National Old Trails Road that is really surprisingly still drivable, pretty easy to drive with lots of goodies out there.
Yeah, good.
You've
turned me on to a few things out there, but I will, of course, if I do get the National Old Trails, I'll be right in your neighborhood. So we'll make that a date.
Sounds good. You know, one of the highways that intrigues me, and I've driven it, a lot of it in sections and pieces, is US 6.
Yep. I agree with you. I would, I've also done bits and pieces and like what I've been on, but I've not done it end to end either.
It's mostly intact, largely intact, over 90 some percent. Mm-hmm. And, I found out recently, my pa always said, better to fill your head with useless knowledge than no knowledge at all. I recently found out that US 6 was the last US highway to be fully paved. It wasn't completely paved until 1952.
Really? Didn't know that.
And it's an odd highway. It's kind of like...
you know where that last piece was?
Yeah, at the Nevada-Utah line. Ah, there was about 45 miles there that was graded gravel until 1952.
Oh, wow.
It's an intriguing highway. For us old timers, we remember the Ronald Reagan's anti-drug campaign about this is your brain on drugs, this frying the egg in the skillet thing.
Right.
And US 6 reminds me of a highway designed by people like that on drugs. It seems to go nowhere on purpose. And as far as I know, it's really the only US highway to go north and south, east and west.
It does get around. I don't know. Yeah.
Originally, it went from Cape Cod, Massachusetts, all the way to Long Beach, California.
Right. Yep.
Yeah. And I found out it's the highest U.S. highway crossing Loveland Pass in Colorado.
Oh, didn't know
and,
that.
Yeah, it's intrigued me for quite some time. Danny, where can we find your books?
Well, they're all self-published. So they're all on Amazon. That's who I use. And there's also... listings on eBay for all of them if you want a signed copy or as you say a defaced copy. I can deface books too.
Well, I got to, you know, I got to tell you how that came about. I'll be brief.
Do repeat that. I know this, so I think it's great.
Oh, it's great. We had a bookstore about three blocks from my house down here at a shopping center. And some years back, they're gone now. Most of the bookstores are, but they had a book signing. And I was really shocked how many people showed up. It was one of the biggest book signings I did. They sold out of books. So I told the manager, I says, why don't we just keep selling the books? And I'll when they come in, I'll sign them for people. I only live a few blocks away. I drive by here every time. And you can sell the books. And I promise I'll sign them for people. And I never heard from the manager. And so about a week, 2 weeks later, I walked in the store and I went to towards the back, their information desk. And there was all those books lined up on the shelf. And I says, I'm here to sign these books. I think they're already sold. It was on their sold shelf. And the lady looked at me, she's just shocked. And she says, well, it's Sunday. We don't have the manager here. You'll have to come back tomorrow. We can't have random people defacing books.
I think that's one of the greatest lines ever.
Yeah, it's the adventures in writing. Hey, yep. And this takes me to another question. Self-publishing. Amazon used to have CreateSpace.
Right.
What are you using now?
They combined that with, I guess, their old Kindle thing. Kindle Direct Publishing, I think, KDP is what they call it now. And it's kind of a combination of the two. And I've done both of them. When I do one, I'll do a Kindle version. Kindle version too. It's pretty much the same as it was. The tools are a little better, I guess. I do it. Well, I don't have a publisher. I dig it out. Here's all. And I'm not in this to make a living with. And I'm retired. And it's definitely a hobby. So it's not the way to make a living. It's a tough way to make a living anyway. And self-publishing doesn't help that. But self-publishing also means self-promotion. And I'm not particularly good at that. Having the editor and so forth involved. How I started that, are you familiar with a guy named Brian Butko? Mostly
No, I know the name, but I don't know him. No,
he's written several books on different things, but Lincoln Highway is kind of his main thing. And actually, it was during that centennial before I had done any books. I was on a bus tour and sitting next to him, we were talking, and he's of course has a real publisher, and he had been looking at Amazon and self-publishing stuff. He's never used it. He keeps publishing real books and so forth. But he mentioned he had looked at that because says if I want to write about something, I have to spend months convincing my publisher that it will sell. And he says there's some things I want to write about that probably won't sell. And he says I'm looking at that. And I thought if it's good enough for him, I'll take a look at it. And so I did. And that's where the Lincoln Highway book was the first one I did. And I'm just kind of, stuck with doing that. Like I say, you got to do it all yourself. But there's no upfront cost. And the final product is pretty decent. So I've just kind of stuck with that.
Danny, first of all, Maggie asked if you have a website.
Sure. It's a toughie. DennyGibson.com. And if people are interested, the books there down at the bottom of that is a link to, there's this imaginary company called Trip Mouse Publishing. And there's a link there to a page. It's got the books and links to Amazon and eBay listed. So that's a nice composite thing. There's two things that I do when I do road trips. I do daily updates while I'm on the road. That was how the website started. So half of it is journal, half of it's blog, and there's probably some other halves there too.
we need to sit down and do this again and have a program and just talk about writing. You mentioned doing this for a living as a hobby. I started writing in 1990, and for more than 20 years, I had a job that supported my writing habit. And
yeah,
I've worked with a lot of publishers, and I've come to the conclusion that publishers and editors are a lot like politicians, and they have an international component. It's kind of like cleaning stables. It comes in different colors, but it all smells about the same. And I have had just the episodes of publishing and writing is just incredible. I sat down with an interview with Jay Leno. I did a book on the Checker Cab Manufacturing Company. Mm-hmm. Jay mentioned, he said he was probably one of the five people who bought a copy. And I said, no, you're one of the seven people who bought a copy of that particular book. Yeah. But I did another interview with Jay Leno on a book I had written. I was all excited. I got this interview with Jay Leno for his book club, and I called the publisher. I called the editor, and I say, I think we got a real winner here. And he says, oh, I wish we would have known several weeks ago. We decided not to reprint, and we're remanding all copies to Costco. So now my favorite one, though, and I'll be short, but Judy's kind of gotten used to me when I get into this writing, and I get frustrated with all the things the editors want. A lot of times they nitpick things. I'm glad I have an editor, but it because it does make it easier on one end and harder on the other. And my book, Murder and Mayhem on the Main Street of America, they went through a couple editors at the publisher. And I got this back and said, we need this edited. And there was a whole section, almost two pages, all highlighted. And it said, scrawled across in the margins, it said, too many Germanic phrases. And I just jumped out of my chair. And I go, what in holy hell are Germanic phrases? All part of the adventures.
Yeah.
Jenny, thank you so much for doing this morning. I hope we've inspired some road trips. I hope we've sold you a few books, and I hope we've encouraged people to, if you got, everybody's got a story in there, get it out, share it with people, inspire folks, or scare the hell out of them when they find out who you really are. But self-publish a book. It's a challenge. Self-publishing requires a lot of extra work, but like you said, it's a great hobby, and we need to encourage people, and we need to encourage road trips.
Yeah.
Really do.
Yep. You say everybody's got a story, and every place has got a story, too.
Yes.
I always feel sorry for the people that, drive the interstate across the country and get off the exits that say Route 66 and check out three or four hot spots and get back on. Because all the places in between are pretty cool, too.
Yeah, wasn't it Charles Kuralt who said, to paraphrase, that the interstate highway was the best way to travel from coast to coast and see nothing?
I believe that was him. He's right. You can do that if you want to, but boys.
If you take the time, the essence and the magic of Route 66 road trip, or US 6 or 50 or 2, is to take time to listen. Talk to a waitress, listen to a conversation, eavesdrop, and walk over and talk to somebody.
Yep.
I've met the most amazing people doing that. I've met Navajo code talkers. I've met people traveling on their 60th wedding anniversary on a Harley Davidson.
Oh, yeah.
They built. You just find the most fascinating people out there.
Absolutely. I'll tell you the worst thing probably about doing that trip in 20 with the I ate a lot more drive through food than I ate on any trip because the restaurants would be closed or limited. So the bad thing was, I couldn't sit at the diner in the morning and talk to the guy next to me at the counter, or at the bar at night and drink a beer with the guy next and talk to him about stuff. It just wasn't, you weren't allowed. You weren't in those kind of situations. I missed that a whole lot.
Oh, gosh, yes. But you did miss an opportunity in that. You could have done what your grandparents did, camp along the road in the swamps and cook over the fire and see what hobo shows up.
Yep. I thought of doing that somewhere, but I talked myself out of it pretty quickly.
Yes, God. You mentioned tires and things. When we traveled, like say we always were repairing tires, when I was a kid. Of course, my dad was funny about that stuff. he just never, he would always buy used tires. Always. Even when he was up, well up into his early 80s, and he could afford to pay cash for a new pickup truck. If he needed tires, he'd cruise the yard sales and find four or five good ones. They didn't have to match.
Oh, yeah.
And he'd set out to drive to Arizona or go see my sister in Alaska. Never gave it a thought.
I've done that before, but I got out of the habit.
Danny, before we go, you mentioned interesting people and interesting stories. In your adventures, did you get a chance to stop at Uranus Fudge Company?
I did. I've been there two or three times, yeah.
Did you ever catch up with Louis Keene?
No, I've never met him. He's either not been there, I didn't go looking, but so no.
Well, he's got a new place a little closer to you now up on
just in Indiana. Up at,
yeah, Anderson, Indiana. Yeah. If you get a chance to catch up with Louis, oh boy. If you look in the dictionary under colorful character, it's got his picture.
I know. I wonder if he ever gets over to Indiana himself. I'm sure he does once in a while.
Yeah, he's been fighting a cancer situation, and he's on the road to recovery. But he was in pretty bad shape for a bit. But he's back and forth between the stores all the time.
Okay, yeah. And, I need to do that. You probably know Pat and Jennifer Bremer.
Yeah,
And they have been up there a few times and have mentioned it, but they live a little closer than I do. So, but it's been on my list.
Yeah, he's just colorful. He's funny. My favorite one. I love marketing. I collect automotive advertisement. I have, going all the way back to 1903, 1902. I have hundreds of different kinds of automotive advertisement. Marketing fascinates me, and Louis. Boy, he sells everything on the hog but the squeal. That boy is just, he goes. My favorite story with Louis is he bought the county newspaper because it was going broke and offered it free to everybody in the county, but he made it more of a satire thing and a little bit of local news. And he renamed the newspaper the Uranus Examiner.
Yes. I love it.
Danny, thank you so very much. We need to do this again.
Enjoyed it. And good time.
And if I can help you plan that National Old Trails road trip, give me a holler. I've got, not sure how I would do it. It's not very big, but maybe I can get this Edsel Ford journal reprinted for you at Staples or something and send you a copy. I'll see if that's feasible. It's a really interesting hit.
Yeah. Or even an electronic copy or something would be interesting. That'd be good.
Yeah, because just like with your grandparents' letters, he was very concise, but he wrote a lot about the places they stopped, the visits they made.
I've been lucky on the I do have a old documentation on the National Old Trails Road, so I'm able to follow the path of that pretty accurately.
Yeah.
And now I have the one for. Pike Peak, so I'll be able to get the route that I want to follow pretty good, but finding spots along the way is a different story.
Yeah, they followed most of the National Old Trails Road through Colorado, New Mexico, and Arizona into California. That was their primary. And some of the entries are really funny, like he's traveling in July, and they end up in Needles, and they end up sleeping on the porch at the hotel, the Garces down there. And he says... You talk about gross understatement. July in Needles, California, he said it was oppressively hot.
Yeah. Yep.
Denny, thank you very much. And we'll do this again next Sunday about 7:00. And we'll beat our gums a bit, do some visiting. And not sure who we got next week, but December 4th, we've got Scott Dahl, the director in the Tourism Convention Visitors Bureau, in Springfield, Illinois. Got him coming up and got a couple other folks I think you're going to want to hear from. I'm trying to talk Marian Pavel into joining me one morning from Bratislava, Slovakia. As you know, all this is Mayberry Television, or familiar with Hee Haw. It's like the KORN radio station. We never know how this is going to turn out. But today turned out pretty well. I think we had a good visit. And Denny, I'm most appreciative for your books, for your inspiration, and for joining us this morning.
Okay, maybe I'll see you in person doing the old road, National Trails.
Well, I got a Jeep. We can find some spots.
There you go. All right.
Sounds good, Denny. Thank you.
Thank you.
Hey, guys, if you guys are out taking a road trip, there's a couple ways you can enjoy and enhance and keep that time capsule feel. And I got two suggestions for you. I know we ran a bit long this morning. I hope nobody minds. But the Roadrunner Lodge in Tucumcari, New Mexico, that is a time capsule, 1964. They blur the line between past and present really well. The other one I highly, you got to, if you do a Route 66 trip or you're in the Ozarks, you really owe it to yourself to visit with Connie Eccles and spend the night at the Wagon Wheel Motel in Cuba. It is the oldest continuously operated motel on Route 66 dating back to the 1930s. Got a bit of a travel schedule coming up, it looks like. December 16th. Apparently, I'm going to be at, unless something changes, I should be at Autobooks Aerobooks, 2900 Magnolia Boulevard in Burbank, California. We're going to be talking road trips. I'll be there with some Route 66 souvenirs and help you with your travel planning a little bit. Planning ahead quite a ways. It looks like I'm going to go to Edwardsville, Illinois for Halloween next year. The Miles of Possibility Conference, number 9. This promises to be a great event. It's always a lot of fun. Cheryl Jett, Terry Ryburn, and Debbie Jo Erickson really pour themselves into creating an event. It centers on the history and the business of Route 66, but they always find a way to get some fun in there with some music and other entertainment. That's one you might add to your calendar as well. And you can check out jimhinckleysamerica.com. I have a lot of listings there. My recommended locations to eat, places to sleep. We always test the pillows, and we always sample the enchiladas. And telling people where to go, it's what I do. So you can also find my travel schedule there. Well, my friends, like I say, we ran a bit longer, but, you know, that's the joys of having our own program. Thank you, everyone, for joining us today, and we will do this again next week, 7 o'clock. Meantime, how about a little bit of music from Joe, Woody, and the boys of the Road Crew? Roadcrew66.com for some inspirational road trip-type music. Until we meet again, my friends, adios.
Say hello to a new friend on an old road. Take a two-lane trip of memories into mysteries unknown. Come along for the ride, Jim Hinckley's America. Jim Hinckley's America.